It's all about what problem are you solving? That should be the focus, not the tech, because you can easily lose sight of what's important when we.
I want to create solutions which help people.
Be this person I want to be in the future. I have to follow this path.
Seeing their lifestyle, you know, the type of lifestyle that I want.
Africa's Dying Canvas. Paint your dreams.
Welcome to today's episode. Today I'm joined by Kelvin. How are you doing, Kelvin?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you for inviting me.
How has been your week like? How has it been work like?
Yeah, it's been a very eventful week. I literally just hopped off a TKYT session because I do this sessions on YouTube called Teach Kelvin Thing. So I just had an amazing session like, 5 minutes ago before this one. And it's really, really cool.
That's amazing. That is truly amazing. I really enjoy some of those things that you do there. Sometimes you might not have the time to watch like the full episode, but it's really eye-opening for the things you do. So, Kelvin, can you just tell us about yourself? Just who is Kelvin? What does Kelvin do?
Sure. So my name is Kelvin Omeshone. I'm a Nigerian. I have been doing software development specifically on the web since 2018. So I'm what you would call like a full stack web developer. I also like to teach everything I know. So I use various media to do that, like articles, most recently, like maybe like a couple of years now, videos. I have a fairly active YouTube channel, and I also tweet a great deal to just motivate developers and like to teach them anything, because I have a philosophy that I have to teach everything I know. So it's just my default state. So I just find these ways to teach. So that's who I am, and that's what I do. I'm currently a JavaScript engineer and developer advocate at a company called Treble. So Treble is an API monitoring service. I'm also the lead maintainer of an open source project called SalesJS. I recently became one, something I'm really, really proud about. I do a ton of open source. I write a ton of open source code. Also working on a new project called the Bunch JavaScript Stack. It's just a lot I do. But in a nutshell, I just like building stuff and I like teaching.
I love the fact that you said you like giving back to the community by teaching what you know. That is truly amazing. And I feel like a lot of more people are not doing this days, especially in Africa. You know, when you jump on YouTube, it's always good to see someone who is maybe from your home country or also teaching the same things, especially at the level of quality you bring. Because I've seen a couple of your videos, the quality is on point. It's professional. You don't feel like you're watching some random YouTube video which has been put together. You actually put in the time and effort to actually bring out these lessons. So how did you get into tech? When did you know that tech is something you wanted to do?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I have an interesting answer to it as well. And first of all, thank you for the kind words about the YouTube. So I got started in tech when I think, I don't know how old I was, but I was like probably 11 or 12 when I stopped, maybe even younger than that. Like, so I stumbled upon my dad's old BASIC notes. So BASIC is programming language. So if you know VB.net, so like that's like the precursor. So BASIC. So at the time, I shouldn't have known what a like programming is, but from what I read from the notes, it was like, you know, these are the instructions you give to the computer to tell them what to do. And at that moment, for some reason, in my child mind, that was like really interesting to me. And I find myself stealing back into those notes to just read them, even though I don't really know much about it. Then after that, I basically did a lot of research, taught myself a couple of things. Like, you know, back in the day, I love a lot of bash scripts. So I was able to write bash scripts a lot. I taught myself Python. And at the time, I was just, you know, anytime I have the chance to be on a laptop or a computer, because I didn't own one, so I have to like find an opportunity to get one, I just want to tinker around. I just, you know, write code, because I felt the coolest thing at that time for me was being able to tell the computer to do stuff and it happens, right? So fast forward a couple of years, I wanted to study mechanical engineering because I love mathematics, but I was like, yeah, let's study computer science. Well, let's see what that goes. So I went to a polytechnic to study computer science, and it was really, really good. They they did help shape out a couple of things, but I always did that extra to always go to the library, always tinkering. Like I was just learning it on, like just wanting to learn how to code really, really bad. And that was it for me. Like that was literally how I got started, from stumbling upon my dad's old notes to teaching myself Bash, Python, learning VB.net, the actual VB.net after seeing Basic, and actually doing stuff with it. It was really, really cool.
That is truly amazing. A lot of programmers, especially the older programmers, will say Basic was their first programming language they've used. I've made a couple of people who just started out with Basic, and that same intuition as you, that you just want to tell the computer what to do and you do that. I think we are in the similar boat there, because I really enjoy the fact, like the nice thing about being a software developer is that you get to see your results right there and there. It's not something you wait for maybe months just working on something, then you eventually see the results. It's like, as you're working, especially with you with Foostech, as you're building the website, you're really seeing how it's coming out. Like, and that is truly something I can relate to, and I think a lot of people will be listening will also relate to this. Then on to one of your biggest achievements at the moment. Congratulations on becoming one of the lead maintainers at SailJS. That is a milestone. I congratulate you for that. It is truly amazing. Can you just tell us how was that journey from your first interaction with SailJS to joining the community and being an active member until you eventually became lead maintainer? How was that? So how was that Wednesday movement? And what did you do to be active in the community? Because I think a lot of people are in certain communities or projects that they really love. I think getting to that position of being a lead maintainer is just not you just being another regular member of the community. There's some things that you did that helped you achieve that goal.
Yeah. So in retrospect, that's when you actually kind of connect the dots. But for me, at the time I discovered sales, it was love at first sight, because I've written a couple of programming languages over the years. Like I've dabbled a lot. So I remember this one, at the end of this one semester in school, my only goal in that break was to learn PHP and Laravel for backend development. So I did a ton of PHP back then. And after that, when Node came around, it was a light bulb moment for me. And I was like, yo, this means that with JavaScript, with one language, right, you could write applications for the client and the server and a bunch of other stuff. And this was interesting to me. So I dabbled, I played out with Express. Most people in Node have started with Express. But I wanted that robust architecture and, something as simple as folder structure is really important. And the way you reason about the code and like the MVC style, I couldn't find something I really liked. So I played with a couple, I tried a ton. But when I found sales, it was really interesting how easy it was to get started. I just had to install like the sales CLI, then once sales new. So it gave me that novel feel. And I love the folder structure. I love the ideas and everything. But when I looked around, most people be like, okay, sales is dead. Nobody uses it anymore. The community was little to none. We had like this Gitter that was not really that active. And I had two choices. The first choice was to like, nah, this is not popular. Like, let's find something else that, people know at least. The other one was, I really like this stuff. How about I try and give back? Because I'm always big on giving back. In fact, I default first to give than take. I was like, okay, since I love this stuff, let's write about it. I can write. So I pitched an article to Smash Magazine on like something called the Node Machine, which is something sales uses. And they liked it. And I got that published there. I'm like, that's good. How about I create a blog that is for sales? And also create a platform to teach sales, because I saw what Lara Castle was doing, and I really liked it because I like to teach. I like to educate people. And for me, sales was an unfair advantage because it gives you all these building blocks to like build full stack application on the web. So I decided to create salescast.com. And while that was going on, I didn't really know enough to make like videos and courses and all that stuff, because like I said, I was originally like a technical writer. But I had to learn to do that. So we have two courses there. I wanted to be more, but there's so many moving parts now. And while I was building the platform, I was like, what else can I do that can, you know, that I can ship today? So which is the blog? So I created a blog, started talking about it. I started tweeting about it and all that. And whilst I was doing that, I said, okay, yo, let's create a community for people on Discord, right? Even though there was a GitHub one, but I'm active. Like, if I see a question, I want to answer it. So I even answered some Stack Overflow questions on still back in the days as well. So I created a Discord and all that. And Mike McNeil, the CEO, of Fleets currently, Fleet Device Management, and also the creator of Sales, sort of like noticed my work. And over the years, since the 2019, we've been conversing. And just by the quality and the consistency of my work, because I wasn't, like, I've been doing this for 5 years, right? Like, I've known Sales for like 5-6 years going forward now. And for those time, like for that timeline, there was no day I doubted that, this is a great framework, because it let me ship. So I just kept pushing it. And it has led to me having a relationship with Mike, in the sense that we could talk about stuff. And even if people like want to consult on Sales, you could also refer them to me, because he trusts on my knowledge on Sales based on the articles I've written about it and everything I did. And I'm still doing, right? So we had a ton of conversations and all that. And he decided that, it's time for, because the whole idea, the whole feeling was, if anyone coming to Sales today, most often than not, they might have actually heard about it from me, because I'm very vocal about it. And he said, it's time for me to step up to more responsibility. So like, there's a whole talk about, in his keynote at SalesConf, that was where he did the announcement. So this is, when that was made, that choice was made, I was really, because if there were any point in time I hoped for like a position in the sales core team, it might just be like being like a core member, not the lead maintainer. So this is huge for me. It's mind-blowing for me, because I love the framework so much. I want to see it grow so big. And it's also humbling that by just following my interests, not really thinking I was popular, but watching, because I'm an engineer, right? Like, I know a good tech when I see one. I don't need social media or someone to tell me that this is good. So if I can build with it, I trust the architecture. It feels really good. It stay out of my way. I think I can make my smart guesses. So I made that bet to let's go down this rabbit hole and see how far it goes. And that was it. Just the consistency and ensuring value to both the community and Sales itself.
That's definitely amazing. Especially I like the way you say that. At the start, people were saying, Sales is dead. Sales.js is dead. Don't waste your time. Of course, there's so many people who are on the internet, the so-called gurus be saying, use Express, use this, use this, use this. Because there's that saying that says, do what's practical and what's not sexy. Like, do what's practical, not sexy. And I think that's what the approach you took. Like, Sales.js is very practical about it. And it's easy to work with. You're easily able to do the things you wanted to do. And you trusted your instincts on that, and you double down on Sales.js. You worked hard to grow the community, worked hard to talk with the maintainers, and to Sales.js is where it is. This day is actually a bit popular now. Like you said, most people might have heard about Sales.js through you, and that is truly something amazing. And I really want to congratulate you on that becoming one of the lead maintainers. It's truly a milestone. Then another thing I'd really like to talk to you about now is the boring stack. The boring stack, I did my fair bit of research on it. And to be honest, let's not lie to you, there's not a lot of things about the boring stack besides you who's talking about it. What is the boring stack? What do you plan to achieve with the boring stack?
So it's my newest project. In fact, the thing is, right, like most people wouldn't know this, the boring stack has actually existed for like a year before I announced it. And salesguys.com is actually built on the boring stack. So I have tested this in the field. I've used it. And at the time, it wasn't known as the boring stack. It was known as the V stack or the R stack or the C stack. So I'm going to explain what that means. So when I built salesguys.com, the very first version, right, I did what was popular, which was like single page application. I did it with Nuxt, which is like a meta framework for Vue. I love Vue. And I also built a sales API, to get data and all that stuff. And that was what was popular, right? But when I used it, as an engineer, I was thinking, like, even though what was advertised like this very nice architecture, like client server separation, but for my kind of application I'm building, you know, as a solo founder, as like as the one dev on the team, it's too much moving part to maintain two repos and, you know, orchestrate or control, or just, you know, just try to make things work. And this was my idea. I was, isn't there a way to use view pages, like view components to pages, right? And still have sales, which give you this rock solid, robust, battle-tested MVC architecture. And I was bothered about it at the time because I tend to want to take feedback for everything I do. So I always self-analyze. And then I was doing some research and I stumbled on a project by Jonathan Reinick called Inertia. So Jonathan is big in the Laravel ecosystem. So Inertia, it's like an adapter, like it's a router that lets you use the Vue React Solid components as pages with any of a server-side framework. So they're all going to be in a code base. So I'm not really going to get into all the technicalities, but that's a little bit boring. And I was like, whoa, this is exactly what I needed. But at the time, Inertia worked with Ruby, Rails, and also Laravel. But for any framework you want to have Inertia, because it also creates like a client-side adapter, which is already there for Vue, for what I use. But there was no adapter for sales. So I had to learn how to build an adapter for sales. And I've always said this jokingly, most of the projects I face day to day, there are no YouTube videos on it. There are no resources. Literally, so you got to figure it out. So I ended up reading Ruby codebase, PHP codebase, a ton of codebase to just understand, and also the docs on Inertia to just understand the protocol, how it works. So I built a very first version of it. I then built this Vite stack that I call it, which is Vue, Inertia, Tailwind CSS, which is amazing for quickly styling pages and working with CSS, and then sales. I call it the Vite stack back then. And I actually gave a talk about the assist Sales of 2022 on how I want to build full stack application. I was like, yo, this is how you should build a full stack application on the web, whereby you harness the power of a very robust backend and a very amazing UI framework like Vue or React or Svelte, just plug anyone you want. And I was like, this is good. I like the experience. So fast forward 2023, I don't like the fact that the name have to change every time. And I was just thinking, what should I call this? How should we pitch this to the world? And I don't know, maybe I saw something, but the word boring came to mind. Because if you know, there's this movement, it's not just from me, right? Like it's as old, like me, I don't know, maybe 20 years old, about boring technologies, which are stable, rock solid tech that are not shiny, they're not trendy, but they get the stuff done. One boring tech is SQL, like SQL, very boring, but we use it all the time, right? So they are, so JavaScript is very exciting. And if you see some of my tweets where I'm just comparing between PHP dev and JavaScript, the whole idea for those tweets is to, it's about the mindset. For me, my code or whatever I use is to solve a problem, right? And that feeling of having someone pay you for the service you've built, or being really enthusiastic and just go online and tweet, oh, this service is really, really good. That's what I want, rather than the shiny that we're always chasing, because there's always something new in JavaScript. So I was like, I want to make JavaScript boring. I want to give people a stack that they can build full stack application and worry about their core business logic and not think about, you know, okay, how do I piece this? Because right now, if you want to build anything in JavaScript, you have to piece a ton of things together. So I'm not going to give you this and this rock solid foundation or technology that you can use to just build your full stack application on the web. You still get your SPA behavior, but it's really rock solid. And not just giving you that, I'm going to give you templates. I will take care of a lot of stuff. Like the one we're currently working on is the one for user management, because user management is a pain. That's why people will use like a third-party service, but you don't really have to. So if you could find, get like the code to actual working user management logic, like sign up, login, reset password, you know, and all that jazz. So that's what the boring JavaScript stack is. It's all stable technologies that let you build full stack application on the web.
Your mindset is truly amazing. Like you said, there was an issue and there was no anything about an adapter for SalesJS, but you kept on, you did the extra work and got it to work with your SalesJS. And I like the way you didn't give up. You didn't say, oh, this is a dead end project. I guess that's the end of it. Let's move on to the next. But you really believed in what you were doing and you actually put in the time to get that to have eventually the boarding stack. And what I really like about the boarding stack itself is that it's, like you say, it is about old, reliable code. It's like, as much as people always try to say PHP is dead, majority of the web is run on PHP. And some people will just tell you that if you want to build a certain project, just go with PHP, no matter what people say, because it will do the better job. And I always also love some of your tweets that are about JavaScript developers versus PHP developers, like you mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Before. Like JavaScript developers will spend hours arguing about the best framework at the moment, or they're going to develop a website using ABCD. I was a PhD developer, just like I had a project, I built my project, I'm ready to make money from the project. And that mindset is really something I see you're trying to push out to people. Like, guys, it's not about exactly the tools you're using, just get the job done at the end of the day. So we start making money from this thing we do, which is truly amazing.
It's, you know, I feel the JavaScript ecosystem have an unfair advantage that we are not taking advantage of. Because about this, right? Like, look at the Laravel ecosystem on PHP. Like, I love that ecosystem. I just watching all their Laravel talks. Like, the PHP is not all that great, right? There's a lot of stuff, moving parts. In fact, they have more moving parts than we, because with Node.js, what you have to do is to like run Node app.js and you get like a server running really. Like, it's just easy. But in PHP, there's so many moving parts, but they have found a way to make it work to serve their users. And I love that mindset that they have, because from all the talks and everyone I've actually seen in the PHP ecosystem, most of them, right, they are focused on building stuff, right? But when it comes to JavaScript, which I love, we're more focused on, you know, measuring milliseconds and in performance. There's nothing bad about it, but it's at a point, it's just like what I call demo projects. Like, we just build stuff for demo, not for serving real actual users. And that's the mindset shift, because like I said, I will not be using JavaScript or advocating for JavaScript for sales if it's not serving my needs, right? It's letting me ship really quickly. Like, salesguy.com is running on it, right? I am currently working on another project who is going to run on it. I built Guppy 1.0 to like serve that. And I'm going to be 2.2 on the web, which is also going to run on the Boeing JavaScript stack. It's all about what problem are you solving? That should be the focus, not the tech, because you can easily lose sight of what's important when we over-label on, you know, what's new, what is taking out like some milliseconds. At a point, it doesn't really matter. At a point, all this tech is just shiny and it's just hype. So I just want that mindset shift. And to foster a new breed of developers in the JavaScript ecosystem that is focused on building products, all right? Building products and giving the user immense value.
That is truly amazing. Let's not focus on the technicality of things or the faster, the speed or the better in comparison, but in actually solving the problem at hand and, you know, helping the world become a better place. Then another milestone of yours. Yeah, it seems like you're a man on a roll. Yeah, it's milestone after milestone. Another milestone of yours is YouTube. You recently partnered at YouTube. You're not getting some of that the sweet, sweet ad revenue money. How was the YouTube journey from starting, you know, starting YouTube? Everyone is saying YouTube this, but it's not as easy as it seems. I think a lot of people can attest to that YouTube is not that Mr. Beast or walking the park or these big YouTubers are doing it now. How was it starting YouTube, going through, you know, the creating of content and, you know, building up the winter brand in the winter community?
So YouTube, right? So for me, right, like I have this idea in my mind, right? Like, I'm sort of like a functional programmer and also functional in how I think and how I deal with life. I have input, process, outputs on everything, really. And the conversion I go with is that I like when I have multiple outputs from one input. Like, that's just how I change it in real life, right? So my content journey, I've really not seen it as content, as more as other areas to give these outputs of the input of being like a software engineer, right? So for YouTube, it started with TKYT, really, where I read this book called Mastery years ago. I've read it 3 times by Robert Greene, awesome book. And I'm also a big fan of Jason Langstroth of the Learn with Jason show. So he does a show similar to TQIT. But at the time, joined with the idea from the book called Mastery, because from the book Mastery, there was this story, you know, let's say you're an artist of old, like in those artists, like maybe like in a studio, the apprentice, the way the apprentice learn is by watching the master do stuff. And I was like, yo, can I flip this? Because on level just said, the teacher tell him and he actually writes the code. But like, how about I flip this where I get people to come teach me their thing for an hour? They're going to write the code. We're going to watch them. I'm going to ask them questions. We're not just going to learn the tech they're teaching, but how they're doing it and their mindset, because that's really important. So by just watching them, you learn a ton, even more than the tech they're teaching. And that was how it started for me for YouTube. The very first version was horrible because my setup was annoying. I had to use, I think it was Zoom. I did this weird thing with my mic where I had to get the speakers. It was horrible. But over time, it has grown. And I wanted to do more YouTube videos. I needed to find my own style of videos, which not just tutorials. I like teaching from, this is what I've done, this is how I've done it, and this is what you should do. Because there are no absolute truths. You only have contextual ones, like based on your reality. So I wanted to do those kind of content, and that's what I've been doing so far. And just being consistent, I have over 106 videos right now on YouTube, and I can't even imagine that I will get to that. But I just do it, like keep doing it, being consistent at it. And at the point I was like doing a video every day, I think maybe last 2 weeks, where I was doing one video every day. It was really immense. And that got me to like 100 videos and also increased the watch hours needed to like become monetized on YouTube, which was just mind-blowing to see the output for just, you know, being consistent, giving value. Because for every time I do a video, I learn, I try to make it better. I edit my video myself. I learn a lot of tricks. I listen to a lot ton of Mr. Beast to get advice. Alex Homozy. I watch a lot of like people talk about YouTube and stuff. And then I take action because I have a rule which is default to action. I rather act now than get feedback and learn than to overanalyze and not take any action. So that's just been it for me. And it's been amazing. I have a goal to get to 200,000 subscribers by the end of this year, which I'm not sure is possible. But it just shows that so far there's progress. Like, it's amazing. Like 6 months ago, I was at 1,000 subscribers, right? So it's just the growth is there, and growth is exponential. So I just keep wanting to do it and just give value to more people and make sure I try to make stuff that I know I want to create and also make it interesting for people to watch and get value from.
That is amazing. That is truly amazing. Especially, I like the way you said you don't see it as creating content, but there's a way of helping people know. I'm creating content for YouTube. It's more like I'm helping people or the beast, and especially your dedication is seen through your successes of being monetized and the growth. And your goal of 200,000 is better than someone setting a goal of 3,000. Even if you miss the 200,000, you'll be closer than someone who set a smaller goal for maybe 1,000 for about 5,000. That is truly amazing.
It's a mindset I have. Like, you know, most people don't want failure. And I kind of flip it. I like to fail forward. There was this book I read called Fail Forward or Failing Forward. But the whole idea is I set glamorous goals that I might never reach, right? But when I fail, it's seen like success, because at any point I fail, I still get more than setting lower goals. Right. So, for example, I said 200,000 subscribers on YouTube by the end of the year. I might never even get to 10,000, but getting to 2,000 at my current size and everything, it's amazing. All right. I failed to reach 200,000. I may fail, but it's still a success story at the end of the day. So, I aim for the sky. If I fall, maybe fall on the roof. That's if. If I hit it, cool. But if I fall, I'm still ahead of the game. That's just how I think about it.
That is truly an amazing mindset to have, that There's that old age saying, they're saying if you shoot for the moon and you miss, you're going to land in the stars. And that's better than someone who didn't even shoot their shot at the start, where you're just saying the moon looks too far. And I think another thing that helps with your mindset is an appreciation of the things you've covered, accomplished so far. At the rate you're moving, someone might be discouraged by 2,000 subscribers and the work rate you're putting, but you appreciate it, like 2,000 people. Like, I think the best thing about social media, a lot of people say social media looks like not a lot of people, but just imagine if you get the 2.23k people in one room. That is a lot of people.
Yeah.
Of course, people always think that on social media, oh, 2K is not a lot or whatever, but just have that in imagination. Like, imagine just 2,000 people in one room. How many people is that? And that is truly amazing. And your mindset alone is just truly amazing. And that is something that I'll congratulate you. That that's a mindset to have. And I recommend a lot of people to have that mindset. There's something I really want to ask you. That is, let's see, lead maintainer for Sales GS, working on the Boring Stack YouTube, plus work. How do you balance all of that? What is your balance like, especially someone who's truly busy and also very active in communities on Twitter? So how do you balance all of that?
Yeah, so the thing is, right, like the truth of it, right, is at every point in your life, you're going to lean, because most people want like work-life balance, which is good, you know, mental health and all that is really important. But for me, I tend to have everything in one. I don't have work. I don't have life. I just have me, like what I'm doing. And at every point, I focus on one thing. All right. I don't like multitasking. I just focus on one thing and do it, then go on to the next one. So I find that most people be like, yo, how do you get so much done? I don't really, it's no magic. I just focus on one. Because if you focus on one thing, like sometimes we'll tend to want to do too much at the same time. Like I do a lot of stuff, right? But at every point in time, I am only dealing on one stuff. Like now we're doing this podcast, I'm only here, all right? So that's just how I, like there's no balance for me. Of course, I take off like that. There are times like I have like a schedule to go unwind, and I really like resting and, you know, taking care of myself. But I know that I don't have a strict rule on, okay, like this weekend I'm going to be working, right? Because I have to do certain things. I have to get the grind going because it's needed. Other weekends I'll be like, you know, I'm just going to the movies or just like have a good sleep. So there's no balance. It's just at every time I listen to signals on based on what I want to do, like self-analyzing and also doing one thing at a time. Right, like that has helped me. If I'm working for like my day job, I'm doing just that. Like this week, I've been like writing a ton of like Golang. I'm just doing that for this week, right? And if I'm shooting a YouTube video, I'm just focused on that. And you find that when you're focused, you tend to do more with less time. So most people be like, "Oh, time management." It's not really like a time management thing; it's a focus thing. Because I've seen that. I could literally do a lot in 30 minutes, like 30 minutes, if I just shut down everything and focus. Okay. So that's just my deal. I nurture my focus to like do one thing at a time. And just after that, I go on to the next one. I do take off time to unwind. I'm not a workaholic. I don't work like 24 hours, but I just try to get things done. There's no balance for me. My work is my life. My life is my work at this point. Maybe it's going to change in the future. But for now, that's just how I see it. I don't want to escape for work because my work is actually my fun. Like, I code for fun. I read for fun. I study tech. I literally, on my phone, most of the time I'm in a documentation somewhere, just geeking out on some docs, on some technologies that I'm interested in for fun. So I find a way to, like, marry both. So there's nothing to escape from. It's just one mix for me. Yeah.
That is amazing. And I think some of the key points you mentioned there was you treat everything as one and focus. You treat everything one. You don't think this is there's only one Kelvin who's doing this, and you visualize it in one. Then the other thing was focus. Like, you just give yourself, like, for the next 2 hours, I'm doing A, B, C, D, and you totally focus. And I think that's the key. That's the trick. That's the magic, or that's the one trick pony, or that you know, that thing that everyone's always looking to be successful. Mm-hmm. Just like focus, just give yourself a period of time and focus for that period of time and get the work done. And I also like something you said previously before in one of the conversations we're having before, like you don't like to overanalyze. You prefer to just dive in head first, then you learn from the mistakes you're making. And I think that's another trait to have as a person. Like if it's something you're really passionate about, just dive in head first. You learn from the mistakes. I think, I don't know if you've read the book called Essentialism by Greg McKeown. He was busy saying to, he was talking about doing things that are essential. And one of his biggest things is saying, if it's not a hell yeah, then it's a no. Like if you're going to do something, you have to be all in. Don't be half-hearted. Don't be not sure. And I think that's one of other key factors that make people fall along their journeys. For you to be where you are today, it was most of the things you're doing, you were really into it. It was not something like, oh, SoulJS looks cool, let me try and work in the community. You're not half-hearted about it. It was like, SoulJS, this is my thing. Yeah. I'm going all in. And if you have that mentality, I think things just become way easier. Not way easier, but less painful. The journey is less painful because you have your big why in the day. Like, I am doing this because A, B, C, D.
Yeah, so one cool thing, right, like I've learned over time is the journey is the reward, not the output. Because the output, the thing you want, you know, let's say being lead maintainer for an open source project, that's the goal, right? And if you look at my timeline, it took 5 years to get here. Mm-hmm. And imagine if I had my eyes on that thing for 5 years, like just imagine it's like, at a point I should have given up because there was no indication of this ever happening. But the trick I've learned is, on the road to getting what I want, I bask in the person I'm becoming to get it. If I like that person, I continue. That person, that growth, that Kaizen, which is continuous daily improvement, is what I feed on. It's my fuel that I'm growing, I'm becoming better, I'm learning. And as a byproduct, which I never focus on, the outputs will start coming in. Because that's the thing about growth. That's the thing about success. There's no... success likes consistency, all right? And if you're sowing the seeds that will produce the fruits of success, whether you think about it or not, it's going to happen, all right? Like, I've had a lot of opportunities that just come out of me just focusing on being the best version of myself. Because that's what I've thought about all my life, is that I just want to become the better version of myself every time. And that person, which is something I can control, because I have another saying, is focus on what you can control. So I can control being a better Kelvin, a better software engineer, a better technical writer, a better YouTube creator. I can control that. And when I focus on that, the output, which is not in my control, which is all these things, it will happen. It's going to take some time because good things take time, right? But because I am basking in the reward of the process, I don't care. I'm having fun. Like, if I have to do it all over again, I'm still going to pick sales because I'm having fun. So the output is going to, the output changes, right? Like, now I'm lead maintainer of sales. Okay, what next? If that was a height for me, maybe I would just stop talking about sales. But yes, I've made it. But it's not it. I just want to become better. I just want to keep adding value. So that process of becoming a better version of myself, it just makes me take my eye off the things I can't control. And it makes the journey worthwhile. That I can't even, like, I did not even know it was 5 years already until I had to check. Yeah.
The journey is the reward, not the goal. I think that summarizes the whole message. That it's the journey that's important. The goal is a byproduct. Like you said, when you started out to be working on SoulJS, it was, your goal was never to be the lead maintainer. It was just working on the project, doing what was necessary. And 5 years later, like you said, you didn't even notice that you've been on SoulJS for 5 years. You're now a core lead maintainer. It's like you said, it's those, if people focus more on the goal, they stumble, they hit rock bottom, they get depressed, they give up on the dreams. But if people focus on the journey itself and say, I need to get 1% better every day, I think that's the saying that it's always all over on YouTube on self-development. Just get 1%, get better 1% every day. That's all that's important. Just Today, you released the YouTube video, like you said. You noticed something was bad. Maybe the audio was off. The editing was off. The next time you release another YouTube video, you need to make that improvement. And I think if people get into that mentality of saying, every time you do something, look at the mistakes you made, fix them, and the rest of the thing just become way easier and less painful as you go on. And as also as I was preparing for this podcast interview with you, I came across a very interesting tweet from one of the developers in Zimbabwe. Like I'm Zimbabwean. He said his Twitter handle is MikiNY_ZW. He said, hot take, but I think certifications are useless for developers. Technologies change and frequently face breaking changes. The real skills is you being able to learn something new and apply it to a functioning product. Developers do a lot more of projects than certification. What are your thoughts on that tweet there?
Yeah, I think it's spot on. It's I resonate with it a lot because it's so the way I see people most times and how I think about these things is the world judges you by the actions and the fruits you produce, right? And oftentimes we want to get the results, you know, the final like the final thing without going through the processes or, you know, like walking through it and actually getting your hands dirty and building stuff. Okay. So I feel like, for example, I am not a big fan of certificates, or it's not that it's bad, because but what I think about it is it's a snapshot of at a certain point, this was the output you produced. It doesn't tell us what you're going to be in like 6 months from now, or even just like a day. That's just a snapshot that this is what you merited right now. So I don't really want to trust it that much, but I can trust when you are continuously improving yourself, right? Like maybe you are learning web development and I see you're continuously, like maybe you're working on an open source project or you're building a product, you are iteratively making it better. Okay, so that's what I can trust on. Like I trust on the fruits you make. That's okay, yeah, these are the fruits I've made. Like these are the things I've produced, more than, you know, certifications, which is nothing bad about it, but I'm not just a big fan because it's just a snapshot. It doesn't tell us about a man's future or anything else. Just a snapshot at a point in time. Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people agree with you on that statement, because a lot of replies to this tweet where I totally agree. And like you said, a certification is just a snapshot of you at that moment. It doesn't really tell us, maybe your certificate is 2 years old. What does it mean now? What did you do in those 2 years when you got the certificate? Is there a difference or is that the same you? And like most people mentioned, that technologies are always changing, they're breaking things, especially when you have those winter version updates from maybe version 1.x to version 2.x. Most of the times, everything's like changed so much. So the certificate which you got maybe 6 months earlier is now basically meaningless to people. And I truly think if people prioritize more on doing things, and this applies to everything we do in life, just don't waste too much time on like doing theoretical stuff, just like more on the practical side, getting your hands dirty. Like you said, like the more you do that things, you are better off than someone who's just being theoretical and just getting snapshots for their life that they did this at this point. And I thank you for those wise words. Then another thing you mentioned in the conversation was open source projects. Can you just give people some tips? How do they get into open source projects? Because I think a lot of people want to do that. And I think it's always recommended in the tech space that jump on open source project, do a pull request, do a submitted, do something. What, from your experience, how can someone, especially a beginner, let's say, of course, these days, most people are software developers. So let's say 6 months down the line, they've done their JavaScript, they've done Python, C#, PHP, whatever language they learned. What is the next step for them? Maybe they've done a couple of projects. What is the next step that they have to do to get into that open source communities and start contributing? What are some tips you can give?
Yeah, for sure. I did a video about like how to get started with open source, really, because It's the same thing we're talking about, the certificate happening in the form of open source, you know, commits, you know, you get to see people want to put in their contribution to open source on their like a portfolio. Not that there's anything bad with that, but it's the mindset thing, right? I know a lot of open source folks, like I have a lot of them in my circle, we talk a lot. And when you study these people, let's say for example, even you, like that built Vue, right? He did not make Vue as a means to get a job. He was following his core curiosity. He wanted to be something he would use, right? And it turns out that that level of care in building stuff, the world liked it. Yeah, and it was actually approached by like Google, even Meteor, like it was approached to like, yo, come work for us in our companies because of your open source projects. We've seen the level of action you've taken and the quality of the fruits you've produced. So the mindset I want when people are getting started with open source is don't look for an open source project for the sake of contribution. Nobody just contributes to an open source project. If you're doing it, you're seeking something. And that's not what open source is. Open source is a team sport, it's a culture, it's a mindset of, yo, I use this tool, I want to add value to the ecosystem or to the tool itself. So you could do open source in various forms. You don't even have to contribute to the core code. You could evangelize about it like I have been doing for sales of Vue, right? You could write articles about it. You could start a local meetup to teach people how to use this tool to build stuff. That is the beauty of open source, of you, is you advocating for tech you use, you understand, and you find value in. You don't want to be a perpetual contributor to every open source project out there just because you want to, like, you know, get the GitHub green, you know, that I never check that stuff. Or you want to, like, you know, put it on your portfolio. What does that even mean, really? Did you build the project? No. You contributed, like, you know, what? What just it might not even be that significant, right? Like, to be honest, because the tech is never moving. So if you think about it, if everybody that has contributed to an open source project claim to put that on their portfolio, it's going to be really confusing because you'll be like, yo, okay, who, what is this? So the whole idea of doing in open source is for you to get better at the team sport of collaboration. You will also be a better engineer. Like, I've learned a ton from just working on open source, reading open source code base at any point in time in my life. And I've always done that. So for me, the core benefit of open source that people don't even know is the source code, because you have access to the mindset and the thought pattern of engineers, literally maybe 10, 20 years in the line on a project. You have access to their mind because the code will show you how they make their choices. You can become a 10x engineer by just reading source code. So when you get started, you're working with an open source tool, for example, maybe React. Start writing about React. Teach React. You solve a problem, write a blog post about it. You want to contribute core code, read just, you can't contribute to what you don't understand. So if you want to really write the code, spend time reading it so you'd see what they even need. And you make meaningful contribution where you have understanding. So you always have to start with understanding. Do I understand this thing? How much better do I know this? Like, I could have written the sales adapter for Inertia if I don't understand the protocol of how Inertia really works, right? So start with understanding. Understand the stuff. And then work your way to making more and more contribution in different forms as your skill set or as what you want to be known for demands. Yeah.
Understand what you're contributing to. Understand why you're being part of that community in the first place. I think that's something people have to take deep down into them, that when you do something for open source community, it's not for the fancy, what we call in developers, Christmas slides on your GitHub portfolio that you have, you know, greens and, you know, those things, but it's because you genuinely enjoy it. And like you said, it's just, things are way easier when something you're truly invested in, like your example of sales, you're truly invested in that, you're able to take the time, read the entire code base and understand what they're doing so that you can help them in the best way you can. And like you say, most people just join this to put on a portfolio. And when you, if you start approaching it like that, it's more like getting back to snapshots of life. You're just giving us snapshots. No one likes to see that you contributed to a project once and that was it, nothing else. Then you went to another project. Doesn't really make sense. Like, you can show that there's a lack of commitment to it. Like, you're not being committed, you're not being committed to the longevity of the project. You're just there maybe for some clout or to be just be put your name as contributor on that thing. And it's truly some wise words that you've really put there. And a lot of people, I think they have, a lot of people are going to learn a lot from this. They're going to take your words to heart, hopefully, and they develop themselves so they can become better developers and also better software engineers. Then our last question of the day, it'll be that, what advice would you give to that African kid right there who's also got their big dreams in the tech field or also want to achieve something great? What advice would you give them so that they can hopefully achieve their dreams?
Yeah, for sure. One thing that have really helped me is having a global mindset. Even though I'm in Nigeria, maybe like in part that no one I've ever heard of, I did not let my environment affect my imagination. I saw myself as a global engineer. And what that did for me is that I put myself in the room where software engineers around the world collaborate and we can talk on the same level. So if you're just getting started, think globally, right? Like, of course, you could start locally and just do stuff here, but have a mindset that you're a global citizen and you can contribute to anything around the world because that's what the internet has made available for you. And another thing that will set you apart is be realistic and be competent. Focus on competence and not status. What we see today is people want to, like, you know, I'm a junior engineer. I don't even know what level I am. But all I focus is, like, every day, I want to become a better engineer. So focus on your competence. Leave the titles, leave the status, leave the clout. It's not important as you being a competent person that people know what to come to you for. Like, if anyone wants to do anything with sales, for example, they know to come to me, right? Because over the time of, like, 5 years plus, I have shown competence in that regard. Everything good you want is going to take longer than you think it will. And that's okay because good thing takes time. So that's why you focus on the journey, all right? And celebrate the milestone, get that feedback, learn. If you have to change directions, do change that. But at the end of the day, keep moving forward. Default to taking action. Don't overanalyze stuff. Don't look for assurances. Yeah, I've seen people want assurances like, okay, if I do X, Y, Z, can you guarantee that I'll get ABC? There are no assurances in life. There are no guarantees. But you could always just make smart bets, smart guesses. Everything is a risk, right? But the more you do this, the more you have a sense of following your gut and following your intuition that this might be like so, right? So at the end of the day, take responsibility for your life. The journey is yours. And take action, focus on competence, and just do it.
Thank you for those inspirational words. Like you said, think globally. Be good. I think that's the best way to put it. Be good at what you do. Don't be someone who looks like they're good, but when they put to do the work, they're actually not good to do it. And I think one thing I really like about being global is, like, JavaScript is the same in Africa, Asia, Europe, North America, South America, Australia. It's the same wherever you go. So there's nothing that undermines you that you cannot be a global on a global space, because the same language that everyone is using is the same everywhere they go. And I really want to thank you once again for the inspirational words. Can you just give us your social media platforms where people can reach you, contact you, maybe have some networking, or they want to help with in the best way they can, or they want to get your help? Where can people find you?
I'm mostly on Twitter at @Dominus_Kelvin. So I guess it might be in the show notes. And also, if I run the Salescast community, where, like, if you're learning JavaScript, like, whatever level of JavaScript you're in, you actually have a place in there. So you could join the community, like salescast.com/chat. It will take you to the Discord where you could just join. So yeah, mostly on Twitter. You could mention me in a tweet. I always do my best to respond to those.
Thank you, Kelvin, once again. Thank you for taking the time out of your schedule. As you can see, a very busy man. But thank you for coming on the podcast, sharing your experience and knowledge. A lot of people will learn a lot from this conversation we had and be inspired to do more. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Africa's Blank Canvas Podcast, so you're always up to date with the latest news. Don't forget to share. That's the only way we grow.